live from the List Track Recording Studio. This is Email Marketing Today. Here are your hosts, Ross, Matt, and Brent.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Email Marketing Today. This is episode number 26. We have Ross Kramer and Matt Elliott here in the studio. How are you doing, guys?
Great.
Absolutely fantastic, Brent.
And we have a very special guest on the phone with us here today, Chad White, who is the research director with this email-specific agency of Smith Harmon. And he's also the author of the Retail Email Blog, a very popular blog in our space. How are you doing, Chad?
Doing very well. And thanks for having me on.
Welcome to the show. And we thought today that we'd take a look at the recent white paper that you've released, The Retail Guide to the Holiday Season. Lots of great information in this guide. And anyone listening in, you can go out to the Smith Harmon website and download the white paper for free. First of all,
it's epic document, Brent, than it is a white paper.
It kind of is. There's a lot of great stuff in this white paper.
43 pages worth. I went to hit print and you're like, no.
Well, you know, the holidays are just super important, you know, especially retailers, but, you know, really almost everybody. So, you know, there's a lot of detail, you know, a lot of kind of breaking things down to make it easy for people to kind of look at their plans like on a bit-by-bit basis. So, 43 pages of goodness, you know, kind of step-by-step.
And before we get into the guide, I wanted to talk about your latest post here today out on your blog. Looks like you got an email from Amazon, from the electronic deals delivers from Amazon, saying that they're going to discontinue the email and go specifically to just Twitter posts, which was pretty interesting for Amazon to make such a bold move like that. What are your thoughts on that, Chad?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what prompted it. I mean, I think, you know, I tried to kind of reason out why they might do it. And, you know, certainly, you know, the chief reason why they might have done it is cost related, you know, because, you know, sending emails is not free and, you know, designing emails is not free. It takes time. Whereas, you know, a tweet has, you know, very little to none front-end cost, you know, in terms of just typing it in, you know, provided that you have a landing page, you know, already set up. And there's no delivery costs because Twitter handled all of that for you. So that's all nice and great, but the problem is that, you know, the audience on Twitter is minuscule compared to the audience that's using email. So, I mean, I don't have a problem at all about them, you know, posting those deals on Twitter. I think that's a fine idea. I am very much in favor of being channel agnostic where it makes sense.
That's what's really surprising. That's not going hand in hand. That it's making a clear break. That's what's really surprising.
Yeah, and you know, there's a little bit. There's always discussion anytime something new comes along about, you know, is this going to be the technology that replaces email? And Twitter most definitely is not going to replace email.
Not at 140 characters.
Right, but I'm sure that this. This occurrence is probably going to spark some more conversations about, you know, whether or not, you know, Twitter is some kind of email killer or something.
We'll see that again, right?
Yeah, and then we'll have to go through all of that again. But it's a very interesting move, and I would certainly say, like, a hand-in-hand thing makes a ton more sense.
Well, let me ask you this, Chad. Are you a follower of this particular tweet?
Actually, no, I'm not. But I certainly might, you know, tune in. I follow many retailers on Twitter with the purpose of at some point perhaps you know diverting from my email studies and looking at what retailers are doing on Twitter, how they're taking kind of different approaches. But already just from not taking a very hard look at it, you know, you see that Twitter is you know mainly about you know having conversations and interacting with people. I think that. That JNR does a pretty good job of that. You know, they post deals, but then they also respond to people, and they clearly have expertise in electronics, and they try to share that. And they certainly have a New York City focus, so they try to play off of that as well. So they have some like real personality coming through. But you know, there are a lot of retailers that are just you know tweeting deals. It's very much a broadcast tool, and I think that you know that kind of has limited you know potential down the line.
Sure, and the reason I asked that question is because right now they've just lost a channel to reach you.
Yeah, again, it's kind of a bizarre move. Yeah. You know, again, I think, you know, being channel agnostic where it makes sense is a smart way to go, and then also using channels to their strengths and, you know, to meet customer expectations. Like, you know, there's a great exact target study, you know, about channel preferences, and, you know, overwhelmingly people prefer to get promotions via direct mail and email. Now, Twitter's pretty new. People may have a preference for getting it via Twitter as well, but I kind of seriously doubt it. I'd be really interested to see if they update that study and include Twitter in there. But, you know, you got to kind of play to each channel's strengths.
And I'll pop in with one thing. I'm not 100% sure of this, but I would have to assume that Amazon's sending their stuff through their own servers. So I bet their cost of delivery is pretty low, considering I hear they own a lot of servers these days. And you would have to assume that they've got their automation stuff just down to a science. So the emails that are being sent are probably just as automated as the landing page that's probably pulled out of a, you know, Oracle Grid database or something like that.
That's a really good point because, yeah, Amazon does handle all of their email sending in-house. So, you know, the cost per has got to be pretty low, especially for an organization that's very good at managing technology.
But we were just talking about this in a meeting earlier this week, or maybe late last week, about the Dell outlet and their success on
right,
Twitter.
Right.
You know, but I think Dell outlet, people are want to buy $200 Dell PCs any way they can get them. Put it on a stone tablet and people will buy, you know, $200 factory refurb Dells. Hell, Brent, I shouldn't say this, but yours was a factory refurb. It's an awesome machine.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a $5,000 machine that we picked up for like $1,500.
Yeah.
And it's worked fabulously.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly seen, you know, some people being kind of critical of the Dell success on Twitter. You know, I've seen people say, was it $3 million in sales or...
Yeah.
Nice. I forget the exact figure, but, like, you know, put that up against Dell's annual sales, and it's nothing. It's some teeny tiny fraction of a fraction of a fraction. And people saying, well, is that really a successful channel? And I guess my response would be, like, well, how much effort did you put into managing that channel?
Right.
So, like, really look at the ROI. And it probably, you know, I bet it probably has a pretty good ROI. But, you know, you place it up against other channels, and I'm sure it's dwarfed by email by, you know, a ton. You know, Dell has a very mature, you know, email marketing program. So I think you got to keep all this stuff in perspective.
But $3 million of an outlet sales, I mean, they're getting a lot of brand impressions by getting a lot of their machines out there still. So
yeah, no, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying, you know, when people start, you know, making comparisons, make sure that you're kind of comparing apples to apples.
Sure,
that's right.
Yep.
Well, making the transition then over to the holiday guide, and we're going to talk about or look at some of the 18 phases of Christmas that you write about. And one of the first things that you talk about in the guide is looking at past data. And I think that is something that is overlooked more often than you would think, that, you know, you have this collection of data from years past, and you have all these valuable metrics at your fingertips. And for some reason, a lot of times you're looking outside for the answers when you can kind of look inwards.
Oh, absolutely. I would totally agree. And I don't know if, if there's some kind of a, you know, everyone's pretty crunched during the holidays. So I don't know if it's, you know, people starting too late to be able to dedicate the time to doing a really good postmortem. You know, but really it's a big shame because that data is 100% germane to you, whereas if you go outside of the company and look for inspiration, then those are things that, you know, may be germane to you that you have to test. You know, you're making some guesses, and obviously things change from year to year, but, you know, tapping your own data is definitely the place to start. And again, things change, but you want to look for opportunities to leverage your past successes to try to find subject lines that were very successful. You know, so for instance, this is a very good example of a retail that clearly did that. Disney Store, their Cyber Monday campaign this past holiday season was exactly the same as it was the year before. Some of the numbers were changed, but the creative was the creative and the idea was pretty much verbatim. All I did was change some of the percentages and some of the price thresholds. So that's an example of someone who saved money on production costs by going back to something that clearly worked for them the year before. You know, if it's, you know, if something works, like, go back to it.
Definitely. You know? With all the competition for visibility in the inbox on some of these big days like Cyber Monday and Thanksgiving and Black Friday, how much have you seen in pre-promotion of those holiday sales?
Well, there's definitely pre-promotion of all those big days. A little less so around. It's tricky because you mentioned, you know, Thanksgiving Day, Black Friday, and Cyber Monday, and the way that it kind of works is that there's a lot of pre-promotion of Black Friday. The Thanksgiving Day sales, those are online-only sales for the most part because most retailer stores are closed. So those are kind of like a pickup. You know, so normally you only see references to that the day before Thanksgiving Day and the day of, whereas you'll see Black Friday references kind of starting on Monday and perhaps as early as the Sunday before. Like, that's a much bigger deal. You know, Black Friday, you know, for stores is huge. So there's a lot more attention given to that. Whereas, you know, the picking up sales on Thanksgiving Day is kind of incremental, so a little bit less of a focus. And Cyber Monday, for whatever reason, it gets a little bit of a kind of a spur of the moment kind of thing as well. It tends to only be promoted, I don't know, I'd have to look back at my data, but I believe it's like, you know, generally just like over the weekend. You know, and mainly on Monday itself, on Cyber Monday.
And that's December 1st. Most people would know that listening in, but just in case you don't, December 1st would be Cyber Monday.
I actually got an email, and I wish I had looked it up before we got on this podcast, but I got an email in July. It was Black Friday in July. And obviously playing on, you know, people's sensitivity and knowledge of what Black Friday means in terms of sales, but it's also planting the seed to me, it's planting the seed as well to get them starting to think of Black Friday when it comes up closer to the holidays as well. But I thought it was a pretty coy marketing trick.
Yeah. You're referring to Tiger Direct, who really loves Black Friday. They had a big Black Friday campaign last year, and then they continued it on all the subsequent Fridays until Christmas. So they had a Black Friday 2, a Black Friday 3, and a Black Friday 4, I believe.
It's kind of like Rocky.
Yeah, so they really like grabbed on to this Black Friday idea. And so I don't know, I was amused but not entirely surprised to see them bringing it up, you know, as part of their kind of Christmas and July campaign. But yeah, there's 8% of the retailers that I track have already mentioned the holidays. Either, you know, as a kind of a minor, like a secondary message, or as a primary, which that Tiger Direct email was certainly trumpeting, you know, the holidays as a major thing.
Now, in your report, you really did a great job of breaking down like several of the stages that the retailers go through in terms of what they're going to promote at what time, starting typically in October, and working all the way up to the last couple of days going with the e-gift cards. And you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, things get compressed towards the end. Towards the end of the holiday season, lots of different things kind of start to happen kind of all at once. Not all of them are germane to every retailer. So, for instance, you know, one of the phases there at the end that I talk about is e-gift cards. Not everybody has e-gift cards. If you don't, then that's not a phase that you're going to have anything to do with. Also, in-store pickup programs, you know, is another one that you may or may not have to offer. And e-card gift announcements. So if you buy something, it's not going to arrive by Christmas, but you can send this announcement to let people know that they have a gift that's on their way. You know, these are all kind of last-minute, you know, tactics, you know, along with, you know, express shipping, overnight shipping, and messaging to shop at your local store. All these are last-minute things. You may not have all of them, but these are all relevant, you know, down the home stretch. And so there's information in the guide about kind of the timing and the way that retailers promoted all of these options.
Hey, Chad, as you know, we've been doing our own bit of research here at ListTrack on abandoned carts. And we've got a new product out called Conductor that allows our customers to now enable shopping cart abandonment. What are any e-tailers making changes to their cart abandonment programs as they head into the holiday season?
I don't have any intel on any in particular, but I certainly hope that they are. That's certainly one of the things that I did not talk about in the guide was your triggered messaging. Hopefully people are getting that totally locked up as well. The guide is dedicated to talking about promotional emails, but those triggered messages are just as important and potentially even more important. I did see your study, and there's a little bit of a conversation that I got going on Twitter about it regarding the timing of when those abandonment emails go out. And I know that I believe that your study was looking at under 24 hours. So there's a little bit of debate on Twitter on whether or not that was kind of optimal. You definitely have to be careful with cart abandonment emails that you're not training people to abandon their cart to get some kind of a discount if you include a discount in your abandonment emails. So if it's just a reminder, then that's generally good, and that can go out pretty quickly. But if you're providing an incentive, you have to be much more careful because you don't want to make it you don't want to be training people that if they ditch their cart that they're going to get something. So if you have an incentive, there's a lot more subtle ways to do it. So for instance, waiting a little bit longer and also incentivizing a product category later on rather than the particular product.
Ross, Chad did talk about something in the report that you could use Conductor for as well, and that's your X Days of Christmas campaigns.
Oh, right.
And I know this came up in your webinar, Chad, but since you're kind of since the frequency is such a drastic change for those X Days of Christmas, 12 Days of Christmas, something that you had suggested, I believe, was to opt in to that 12 Days of Christmas or however many days of Christmas campaign to actually promote that and opt into it rather than kind of do it across the board so that you have people unsubscribing because they're not used to getting these emails on a daily basis.
Yeah, you definitely have to be careful, because if you're running, the 12 Days of Christmas campaign is kind of the gold standard when you're talking about these X Days of Christmas. In most cases, if you're not already kind of ramped up to that level, there are certain retailers that are already kind of sending every day, and so their subscribers are kind of used to that. So you can do a 12 days campaign sending every day if your subscribers are already receiving every day, they're used to that. There are retailers like Bluefly and Spiegel and Neiman Marcus and a few others that are used to the kind of high frequency like that. So you can slip that in, just as a part of your normal program. But most retailers are not sending that much, and their subscribers are probably not going to want to email that much. So you have to be really careful. For instance, Blair was sending generally like two, maybe three emails a week until they had their 12 Days of Christmas campaign. And suddenly, their subscribers were getting 12 emails, in a row for 12 days. That probably didn't go over all that well. So you have to be really careful. And I told this story on our webinar that I could quickly retell because I think it's a really great one. I was talking to a retailer last year, and we were talking about these 12 Days of Christmas campaigns, and he said that he protected his email program by only sending the 12 Days campaign to their best subscribers, the ones that were most engaged, and that the opt-out rates weren't any higher than they typically saw. Now, the problem here, the disconnect, was that he wasn't taking into consideration that these were his best subscribers, and that your best subscribers don't opt out nearly as often as your general overall subscriber base. So he was actually accelerating the opt-out rate of his best subscribers by a significant amount, which is a problem. You want to keep those best subscribers. So don't think that just because you have a group of really good subscribers that they're going to necessarily tolerate having their frequency jacked up more than people who are less engaged.
But I think that'd be a really great study sometime in the near future then to maybe this retail season, try to get retailers to share their unsubscribe numbers and the impact of, you know, Christmas campaigns or holiday campaigns?
I would love to see those numbers. I would love to see those numbers. And I bet that, I bet that there's a lot of pushback from senior executives during the holiday season, you know, when it comes to email marketers saying, you know, look, we should not ramp up as much as we did last year, for instance. I bet they get a lot of pushback because holiday sales are just so critical. I think there's a lot of short-term focus and not a lot of lifetime, focus. And I think that's, that's okay if you fully understand that that's what you're doing. If you fully understand that you are sacrificing long-term sales for a much smaller short-term gain in sales during the holidays, then that's fine. But I don't think that a lot of retailers kind of realize that that's the trade-off that they're making. And probably because a lot of retailers haven't taken the time or dedicated the resources or secured the resources to be able to measure that. And it's a little bit of hands over the eyes when it comes to the effective, when it comes to lifetime value. I don't think a lot of retailers are really really aware of the decisions that they make and how they affect that.
So in your report, you mentioned the idea of including that into the preference center and making that an option for them to enroll into that program and make it then, if they were to make it an opt-down process instead of an opt-out process if they wanted to get out of that stream.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to sell it. If you sell it, then people who want those additional emails, will opt in and probably be, pretty happy. But allowing them to self-select their way into that program is a very safe way to do it. And you can use your normal email stream to help promote that. And you can also do what QVC does, which is they have that as one of their newsletters that they have on their listing. They send out, they give you the option to sign up for a variety of different emails, and their 12 Days of Christmas campaign is one of the options that you can opt into. They're the only ones I've seen that have done that, which I think is very smart. So that your most brand loyal customers, give them a chance to opt into that, at any point, during the relationship.
Chad, you keep your eye on a lot of email. You see a lot of email. Out of all of the holiday email that you've seen, do you have a favorite piece of creative, something that you see that really, that you're really impressed by?
Well, you see a lot of interesting stuff during the holidays. That's when people kind of pull out the big guns. You tend to see more animation. I'm going to be really curious this holiday season to see if more people start experimenting with video GIFs or with certified video from Good Mail.
Right.
I'm really curious to see what they do there, and also how they use social media, and also be really kind of curious to see if any of that really is all that welcome during the holidays. During the holidays, people are really busy, and I wonder if some of these things that are more time intensive are going to be, not as readily engaged with. So I'm thinking things like video and things in the social sphere that don't help people make buying decisions. I wonder if people will not really engage with those so much. But in terms of creatives, I mean, I'll be completely honest. Like the thing that always stands out in my mind was something that was relatively simple. It was a couple of campaigns, one from Overstock.com. And one from Tiger Direct, and both of them around Black Friday. Tiger Direct links their Black Friday campaign to breast cancer awareness, which, as you know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so not so far removed from people's minds. And they send out their Black Friday emails in pink, and they call it Pink Friday. And so the email is just full of pinkness, and it really, it pops in the inbox when you're seeing lots of kind of traditional Christmas colors, lots of green and lots of red. You suddenly see a lot of pink. It stands out. And the one from Overstock, also a Black Friday campaign, where they used reverse type, so white text on a black background, which is so not a best practice. But I'll tell you, when I came across that in my inbox, it so stood out because you suddenly got this big blast of black, you know, and this, you know, white text on it. It really stood out, you know, not super easy to read. I think they probably increased their font size a little bit to make it a little bit easier to read. But I'll tell you, like, those are like really simple kind of things that I, you know, to me, like, really made an impact. But you'll definitely see, you know, lots of, you know, creative, interesting tactics trying to stand out because there's so much competition in the inbox during the holiday season.
And you also did a really good job in the report of breaking down subject lines and talking about some of the things that work in that. And speaking of controversies, I noticed buried in there was a reference back to Alchemy Works and their study that they did on long subject lines.
Yeah.
And I actually had a discussion with Della Quist from Alchemy Works at the Email Insider Summit a couple years ago, right at the beginning of when they were starting to put the study together. And there was a lot of controversy then with a lot of people, you know, a lot of the marketers speaking up and saying, but we've tested in short subject lines work. And Della's point goes back to the point at the very beginning of this podcast when we were talking about going back to prior campaigns and looking at your history. And that's where when Della came up and said, you know, that's a great point. And, you know, so many times people say, well, what works? What's the best subject line? Is it long? Is it short? What's going to work for us? And he said, you know what? All of you email marketers in this room have a gold mine of data you're sitting on, and that's all your past campaigns. You need to go mine that and figure out what's worked from you and worked for you and use that as a baseline and somewhere to start with. So, you know, that's all real good information. But just real quick, have you had any experience with testing subject line length, and where do you think that hypothesis comes out that Alchemy Works threw out there?
No, I think it's very interesting. And one of the things that was kind of asserted in that study, if memory serves, is that the number of words might be more important than the number of characters. And so you have to, you know, so you got to kind of pay attention not just to the character count, but the word count. And so, like, lower, you know, the lower word counts, you know, can be effective. But if you're using some longer words, that can work. But, yeah, you know, I also talked to Della about the study because I was fascinated by it as well. And, you know, a lot of what he was trying to say is that it's not an absolute. You know, short subject lines aren't necessarily the best. And so what he was trying to do, I think kind of the main point of it, is that it's not always the case, and you should definitely be testing and seeing how your audience responds. You know, what, you know, works for other people may not work for you. You know, my blog is all about, you know, kind of finding interesting things, you know, giving people ideas about things that they may want to test. You know, none of it is about, you know, absolutes. None of it is, you know, do this and you'll be, you know, rolling in money. Your program will be super successful. You know, that's just not how it works. Everybody's audience is very different. Even, you know, retailers that compete for the same people, you know, they have different brand identities. It's going to be different. You have different people. So, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. You got to look, you know, at your own data. And but hopefully, you know, a lot of the subject lines I included in the guide will give people, you know, ideas for, you know, certain keywords to maybe test out with their folks, you know, different syntaxes, you know, and, you know, allow them to do some additional testing. You know, I really hope every single email that everybody sends, they're doing a subject line A-B test. So, you know, most ESPs make it super easy to do. You should do it every single email. You know,
definitely.
And a lot of times you won't see a significant difference, but sometimes you'll see huge differences. So you should always be, you know, trying to game that.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Chad, for joining us here today. Some great information. And for anyone listening in, you know, you can go out and you can download the holiday guide for free out at the Smith Harmon site. That's smith-harmon.com. And thanks again, Chad, for joining us here.
As well as Chad's blog. We should plug Chad's blog.
RetailEmailBlog.com.
Awesome stuff, Chad. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Chad.
Thank you. It's been a great conversation.
Right on.
And I just wanted to also mention here that we had a great webinar this past week with Jim Stern with Social Media Metrics. And if you missed that one, you can download or you can watch that for free out on the website under the resources area. We also have another webinar coming up here on September 16th from 1 to 2. That's with Billy Joe Wara from Lawrence and Schiller. And that one's going to be called Social Media Needs Email. sets coming up here, and you can register for that on the website as well.
Hopefully somebody from Amazon is going to be listening or watching in on that.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us here today, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See ya. Take care.